Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Braun, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the hell are you doing?
How the hell am I doing? You threw yourself into that one. It was very enjoyable. You were like, Japan enthusiast. Oh, lovely old job. I'm doing well. Chris, I have to say, happy birthday. Happy birthday. We are 3 years young this week, if we haven't got our sums wrong.
We should really have
brought tea and cake and, you know, booze, but we...
Don't you worry. We got the coffee ready. Tully's coffee. Ready to go.
Look on the back of that coffee. Right. Tell me how much sugar is in that. There's got to be sugar. How many calories is it?
Black coffee, my friend. No sugar.
Oh.
Zero calories. Do one, Pete. Do one.
Oh, that's amazing, mate. Well, I had no idea. There's no sugar at all. I thought you were like a sugar boy.
But it does have a disturbing amount of caffeine, right? It's got like 350 milligrams of caffeine. Isn't that quite a lot? Is that why
350
I'm like...
milligrams? Where's milligrams? Yeah. I mean, micrograms. Yeah. I mean, I would say that...
That's a worrying amount.
You won't see the fourth birthday. You won't see the first anniversary of the Abroad in Japan podcast.
Well, I've made
one
it
of the
this
most
far.
Successful YouTube to podcast transitions in the world.
In the world. Yeah, I can't believe it. We are now, I think, about 190 episodes in after 3 years. Yeah. We started, the first one out went out on 14th of February 2018. It was a different world back then. You could fly on a plane. It was a simpler time.
Yeah, Valentine's Day.
Much better fucking time. Anyway, it was a different time. And I remember we recorded in the studios for Absolute Radio, where only a year or so before, Natsuki had made it big and got on British radio. And yeah, it's crazy. It feels different. And like now, for the first time in 3 years of doing this, guys, we actually, Pete and I, can see each other. We do the podcast. We have a video chat now, as opposed to the just audio. Yeah. Don't know why we didn't do this sooner.
I know, yeah. Well, I was very concerned about internet and bandwidth and broadband and latency and me not being able to figure out when Chris is going to stop talking. And turns out it doesn't really matter. Just get yourself a video and it sounds a bit better. I'm sure you guys may have noticed the difference. We're not talking over each other half as much. We're not kind of like doing elongated giggles for no bloody reason just to see when people are going to be starting to talk. Can you hear me now? Okay, begin. We should have done this earlier. I just like the fact that even 3 years in, we are still learning a little bit about ourselves and a little bit about our craft.
Still innovating. And of course, we went to twice weekly last year as well. But no, thank you, seriously, guys, from the bottom of our hearts, from the bottom of my heart, certainly. Thank you for tuning in every week and being a part of the podcast. It's great. Like the videos I put, they can be quite stressful to make. A podcast is so much more chilled out and relaxing, and it's just nice to catch up with Pete every week. And it feels like a secret room, a secret place.
Secret sexy club.
It's exactly that. It's the manifestation of Secret Sexy Club, the finest hostess club in Sendai. I still have yet to go.
If you, And if you want if you want something different, if you've got an idea for the show, maybe a game we could play, let us know. If you want to hear more interviews, less of me, more of Chris, you know, just let us know. Give him an email.
Well, that's so I don't have to read them. Only this year, only last year, we moved to having interviews of folks as well. We've had Joey, we've had Connor, Sharla, Norm. So we'll be doing that as well more often and letting Pete have a week off. So, yeah, thank you for listening to the podcast. We look forward to keep going long into the future. Plenty of stories to talk about. But this week, we are going to be reading out travel stories that you guys have sent in. At the end of last week's episode on Wednesday, I asked you to send in your stories, things that went wrong during your trip to Japan, things that went right, memories that you cherish, memories that you want to forget. You've sent them in, and we've got some pretty good ones to read out. And I love these because I love traveling, and I love the spirit and the sense of adventure that comes from travel. But it's something that none of us have been able to do in the last year, given the circumstances. So we can live through some of these hilarious stories. And the first one is from Dots from the Philippines. And take it away, Pete. Let's hear our first story of the week.
Of many. Of a thousand. Yes, we've got an email from... Sorry, I just lost my place on the old document because we were talking about video.
Bloody useless.
Useless. We've got a message from... Dots. Hi, Chris and Pete. Hope both of you are well. I'm Dots from the Philippines. Long-time viewer, listener of both the channel and the podcast here. Before COVID struck, I was lucky enough to visit Japan 6 times in 5 years, both with friends and going solo. Enjoyable. But the strangest thing I've ever encountered, not just in Japan, but the strangest ever period, was on my first trip in 2015 with 2 friends on our first day in Tokyo. And wandering around Yoyogi Park, lovely park, when near the park's entrance was a queue of around 15 or 20 young girls, aged around 13 to 17 by our guess. Naturally, we wanted to see what was going on, what was at the front of the line. Said line ended behind a tall tree where, lo and behold, there was what can only be described as a rejected host club applicant-looking guy dressed in black from head to toe with blonde hair and, shall I say, a not a particularly attractive face, probably in his mid to late 20s. He was, shall we say, romancing a girl who was presumably at the head of the line. He was whispering sweet nothings in her ear, touching her face, and at one time, pinning her to the tree with his arms. This goes on for a few minutes, then onto the next girl in the queue. At one point, the host club reject guy steps out from behind the tree, faces the waiting line of girls, and raises his arm diagonally in a weird gesture pointing to the sky. All the girls mimicked him. So it's getting darker, and at some point, I guess he got tired already. So he stepped out again and addressed the line of girls. We couldn't understand him, but it was obvious he was saying, "That's all for now. Show's over, folks," as the guys let out a collective wail of disappointment and eventually dispersed. My friends and I, along with other tourists in the park, were asking each other, "What the flip is going on?" And no one had the slightest idea. It was really creepy. And I also have to say that there were no policemen or any other authorities figures in sight, making us wonder that if this was a legitimate operation. So I ask you, gentlemen, would either of you have any idea what the hell was going on? I'm still intrigued by it to this very day. Dots from the Philippines. Chris, I haven't got the first fucking clue. There's usually a bloody outside food market near the entrance of Yoyogi Park. It's what you usually got. Not tree molestation.
Detective Broad is on the case. So we've got a guy who's a rejected host club applicant looking guy, a relatively attractive guy who's not particularly attractive, apparently, in his mid to late 20s. I think he must have been, right, this is my hypothesis, he's from some sort of second-rate band that isn't that good, but he's got a little bit of a following. And he's said, like, come on then, let's have a meet-up in Yoyogi Park. I'll be there and I'll give you a special autograph or something. A sea of girls have turned up to meet him. And back in 2015, around this time, when this happened, when Dot saw this happen in the park, there was a craze going on where guys would pin girls up against the wall and sort of push them against the wall and put one arm above them in a sort of masculine 1960s kind of film star manner, like old Hollywood. And there was that kind of craze going on. Everyone was doing it.
Everyone was doing it. You'd pop in a shop, there goes some Ibisen, they'd pin you up against the wall. What can I do for you today? It was happening in cinemas. Oh, fantastic.
I remember seeing Rachel and Jin do it as well, actually, in a photo, if I can recall, Rachel and Jin. But like, everyone was doing it. It was pretty harmless fun, I think. It was nothing too sinister about it. But I think clearly at that time, that craze was going on. This guy was like, I'll do the... the pinning up against the tree thing. Touching of like the face, a bit scary. Given they're 13 to 17, bit worrying, not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's a bit much, isn't it? And I hope that man is in prison now.
But you do see things like this. Like, people love to queue for things in Japan, for the most mundane things. Mm. And this does seem to fit that description rather well, of being rather mundane. But I don't know. Yeah. Very bizarre.
Bizarre.
Keep an eye out next time you're in Yogi Park, ladies and gentlemen. Do you have any theories? Have you any theories? Let us know. Let us know at the podcast, abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We've got one from James from the UK, who says, "Dear Chris and Pete, I thought I'd share with you a story of ineptitude and incompetency that befell me on a ski trip to Japan at the start of last year. I was studying as an exchange student in Tokyo last year, and on one fateful weekend, myself and a few friends decided to go on a ski holiday to a resort in Nagano. I must now point out, I'm not a confident skier. Prior to this trip, I had not skied in 7 years, and my friend had barely ever skied at all. But no matter, we'd pick it up as we went along, or so we thought." Yeah, I've had that mindset many a time when I've gone skiing. Yeah. After hours of semi-passable skiing, my friend and I found ourselves sore and too tired to carry on. We were halfway up the mountain, but the easiest slope to get down to the bottom was closed, and we did not want to attempt the harder route. Simple, we thought. We'll just take up a chairlift up the mountain, then use an easy route to get down to the gondola, which would take us down to the bottom of the mountain. What could possibly go wrong? So we took the chairlift to the mountain's peak, yet to our surprise, we found that when we got there, there was no easy route to take us down to the gondola. The only path was via a diamond black run, the hardest difficulty ski slope. We'd realised our calamity immediately, knowing that if we tried to attempt that run, we would likely injure ourselves. And for those of you that don't know skiing, I can attest, I'm an intermediate skier, right? And I cannot go down a black run. It's incredibly scary. And I did go skiing not that long ago in Yamagata at a ski resort, and it was like a green run and a black run, and I nearly mixed it up. I went down the black one. A green one is kind of, you know, a leisurely pace. It's quite safe. Black one is like a vertical drop off a cliff. And so it's pretty scary. Anyway, James continues, "We realized our calamity immediately, knowing that if we tried to attempt that run, we would likely injure ourselves. So we made our way back to the chairlift, hoping to take it back down so we could find a more appropriate route down the mountain. However, upon reaching the chairlift, the man operating it told us we would not be allowed to use it to go down. We understood that it's not correct protocol. But this was an emergency. You know, could we please go down it? I'm not an expert of the Japanese language, but I tried to convey our lack of skiing ability in any way I could by simply saying the word ski, followed by any negative I could think of. Ski janai, ski chigaimasu, ski ie. This sounds like the Pete Dolson dictionary of Japanese. Ski chigaimasu.
Perfect. Sounds perfect to me.
The man seemingly underestimated the problem of the situation, as he repeatedly just said, "Go down the black run. Go on, give it a try." suggesting that if we slalomed down, we'd be fine.
Yeah. Could you not just go down on your bum or something?
I mean, have you been skiing?
No. Okay. I'm speaking from no level of experience.
It's pretty dangerous. Like, we're talking pretty steep here. We knew we wouldn't be fine. So we continued to ask him. The man then disappeared to his operating room for a few minutes, evidently speaking on a walkie-talkie. My friend and I assumed he would finally allow us to use the chairlift to descend the slope. To our surprise, however, a team of no less than 7 mountain rescuers appeared at the site moments later. Medical packs, body sleds and everything. Our attempt to indicate that such measures were simply not necessary were futile, as one of the team indicated for our skis, which he promptly confiscated from us. We were then led over to the black slope and told to descend the mountain on our backsides as the team supported and monitored us on our way down. It was a journey of humiliation, as we could merely look over at fellow skiers flying down the mountain with ease as we slid down slowly but surely on nothing but our behinds. All the best, James from the UK. I've always wondered what would happen in that situation, actually. And now I know. Ski down like a Muppet
on your bum. Yeah. What happens, right? Like, what happens if there's a little rock sticking out of the... I don't know how they make ski runs. I don't know how... Do they just sort of like go, right, there's a rock there, that's sticking out there, you can't have that down there, this isn't a run, rubbish.
Well, they have to carve it out of the mountain and then they like flatten it down and it's all right, tended to. Okay. Like, it's pretty safe.
Okay.
You know? I've only been off piste, so off that's called a ski piste, right? If you go off piste, then that is just skiing in the wild. And I've done that once with Ryotaro and I nearly died. And I'm pretty traumatized by it to this day. But yeah, well done, James. You got down the mountain and that's all that counts. Without broken legs. Lordy. Bloody hell.
Making my knees hurt just thinking about it. Awful. Oy, oy, oy. We got an email from, or fax rather, because it's a fax machine special. Greetings, Chris and Pete. Amy from Atlanta, Georgia, USA. On our second visit to Japan for our honeymoon, my husband and I stayed in 3 Airbnbs. In the instructions for accessing our second Airbnb, the host told us not to draw attention, and if asked, to say that we were staying with our friend Kaz, although that was not the host name that was given. You see this a lot in Airbnbs. They don't want anyone to know that they're running an Airbnb, so you've got to pretend that you are a naturalized Japanese citizen somehow. Of course, that wasn't advertised about the listing in advance, or I wouldn't have chosen this one because that seems a bit sketchy. Despite this, our stay was very nice and there was no trouble, but it left me with two questions. Our first Airbnb host was also supposedly named Kaz, so we wondered if this was some generic or common name like Bob or Joe that's often used to keep things vague. Have you ever had something risky like this? And secondly, this also made me wonder if staying in Airbnbs can be risky. I recall a story in one of your previous podcasts where a listener found out they were not allowed to stay in their Airbnb. I'd love to know for our next trip if Airbnb is generally on the up and up in Japan and if there are things you need to look out for when booking. Keep the great work, you two, and take good care of yourselves. Amy from Atlanta, Georgia, USA. Love Atlanta and love that email.
I mean, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Pete, about how, up until a few years ago, like a lot of people had some Airbnbs that they weren't technically allowed to have. Like, I remember I stayed in one and it was very shady. It was like clearly not allowed to happen. And they told us again to say something like, if we got caught, just be like, oh, we're just catching up with Takeshi and just like, just lie, which is always a bit of a surreal situation. I don't know if Kaz is like a generic name like Bob or John Doe. Kaz is like Kazu or Kazuhiro. So,
right. It's probably just like, it's probably just a generic name that the person who operates all of the properties kind of says effectively. I mean, I don't know whether that would help at all, but it happens a lot. I mean, and you've got to remember, like, look, if you're doing it in bloody Rio or something else, or Durban or somewhere, like you know, these or London even, like, that is sketchy. But if you're doing it in Japan, Tokyo, you know, there are, you know, pretty slummy places, but then they're probably going to be okay. You're probably pretty safe when it comes to stuff like that.
I've only had positive experience with Airbnb in Japan. I remember I got a really good one when we were doing the filming for Cat Nation, the cat documentary I did in 2016, which you should have done the theme tune for, as you've just established. We stayed in an Airbnb overlooking the Sensoji Temple in Asakusa. Mm. It was really amazing. Like, the view was incredible. Mm. And it was in like this really dull, dreary looking, faceless apartment block. But the view was one of the best I've had from anywhere in Japan. So,
You get to experience like living like a local, I suppose. You don't have the, you know, the usual. You don't have the pros of a hotel room and the amenities and the vending machine stuff. But like, vending machines are everywhere. 7-Elevens are open all the time, and you'll usually have a kitchen, so you can eat. You can save a lot of money staying in Airbnbs if you're cute about it.
All right, Airbnb sponsorship. Bloody hell.
Just saying, guys. Just saying. I mean, God knows whether they're even allowed after in a post-pandemic world. God knows.
Well, yeah, they had a really nasty time, didn't they, a few years ago. I remember that was one of the first things we covered back in 2018. Japan cracked down, and I think, you know, the number of Airbnbs in Japan went down by like 50% because it got really difficult. There's a lot of paperwork. So I don't think this is going to happen anymore. I think these days it has to be above board. It has to be publicly known that it's an Airbnb. So don't worry. You won't have to break in. You don't have to go in and pretend to be friends with Kaz next time it happens, Amy. We've got one here from Nika, who says, hi, Pete and Chris. I always get confused when it's the other way around. Pete and Chris. My name is Nika, and I'm from the Netherlands. I love the podcast. It's been the highlight of my Wednesdays for quite some time. When Pete said he's from Hartlepool, it reminded me of when I came across a group of biker travellers from Hartlepool, and the first thing they told me was about Hartlepool's people, who are called monkey hangers, because they executed a monkey once for being a Frenchman. It made me giggle. your people, Pete.
The biker travellers, yeah. The Hartlepool biker travellers, famous.
Speaking about bikers, when I was travelling down the entire Michinoku Trail in Tohoku on my own and was staying for 2 days on a campground where I was the only one staying there, I came across a really interesting group of bikers. For those of you who don't know, the Michinoku Trail is an amazing route. It starts in Hachinohe in Aomori and ends, I think, in Fukushima. And you can walk down the entire coastline. And the coastline of Tohoku, the east coast, is absolutely stunning. Lots of cliffs and things. Anyway, I left my tent for a day hike and I came back to a group of 40 scruffy-looking Japanese bikers building their tents around mine. I was immediately invited to dinner and persuaded to enter their biker's spa while holding a beer, which turned out to be a metal oil drum heated by a wooden fire. After a night of heavy drinking, we exchanged numbers and went our separate ways. After a week or two, I received a message from one of the bikers with a Google location pin located at an abandoned golf course in rural Tochigi Prefecture with the text, "Please come and have beer together." Of course, I asked one of the girls I clicked with if it was safe, and it turned out that she was there too. I decided to take the off-beaten track route that got me close to the golf course. After climbing a hill without a path and through some bushes, I wound up behind the tent of a group of Japanese leather-wearing, barbecuing men who were quite startled by my sudden appearance from the bushes. I looked past them and found out I was invited to Vibes Biker Fest, with tents as far as the eye could see. It was incredibly big. I made my way to the main stage and somebody slapped a staff card around my neck and told me I was late. With absolutely no idea what was happening, I was paired with a group of classically trained Japanese chefs cooking dinner for the 150 festival volunteers for 4 days. As a form of welcome, they made me wear an apron and called me Oranda Mama Style for the entire day, literally Holland Mama Style. It was nice. Awesome. It was the weirdest and most beautiful moment of my entire 3-month journey, and I made friends for life. All the best from Nika. What an incredible experience that she was just met these people camping and they invited her. It sounds like they secretly just got some extra labor. They're like, yeah, come along to this event. Exactly, by the way, you're a chef now for 4 days. Can you cook all our meals for 150 people? It sounds like she got done there. But it sounds like a great little sort of Pete Donaldson-esque scenario, doesn't it?
I'd love to get involved and be Big Mama Netherlands.
I think the biker folks in Japan are really nice people. Like a lot of my good friends, like Yuki, my good friend Yuki, Tiny Beer Yuki. He is a motorbike, and him and his crew, his posse, they ride around the mountains of Japan on their motorbikes. And I think Japan is like a really good country for bikers, because there's just so much nature and mountains to lap up and enjoy. I've dangerously tempted to get like a motorbike or a scooter or a moped or just a bicycle. It's going down. I'm backing down. Okay. It's just going to be a bicycle.
Yeah, just do it. And just another bicycle, really. Yeah. I mean, you've ruined so many bicycles on your journey across Japan anyway.
How dare you?
A message from Jonathan. Hello, Jonathan. Hi, Chris and Pete. Hope you're doing well. Long-time listener and follower of the Abroad in Japan YouTube channel. But finally, I've got around to sending something. Back in 2017, my friends and I went for a 3-week trip to Japan, covering the usual tourist spots like Kyoto, Tokyo, Osaka, and Hiroshima. We also went to Okunoshima, the rabbit island, where one of my friends recreated your infamous scene of lying on the grass and being swarmed by hungry rabbits. There was one embarrassing moment, though. I had one night when we went to get some dinner at a busy 7-Eleven near our hotel in Tokyo. There was one item I picked out that the staff working at the cash register graciously offered to warm up for me in the microwave. Having finished paying, I took all the bags with me and proceeded to leave the store, having completely forgotten about the food still in the microwave. As I left, the staff started calling out to me with okyakusama. Is that okyakusama?
Customer.
Repeatedly, each time getting louder and louder as I obliviously kept walking away and also not knowing enough Japanese to understand. Finally, the staff ran outside and yelled very loudly with a frustrated tone, "Okyakusama, microwave you."
Microwave.
Microwave. Oh, microwave. Sorry. Hey. customer, microwave. To which I then realised what had actually happened at Walkback the store, completely embarrassed at the sight of a long line of people waiting to pay. Apologised profusely as I received my microwave food, and I left as quickly as I could. To this day, my friends will never make this microwave story go, although we always look back at it and have a good laugh. Keep the good work with the podcast and the videos. Hope to travel to Northern Japan, and once the travel restrictions and safety issues are resolved, Jonathan, Toronto, Canada, microwave.
dear. Enjoy. I think I've done that before as well, embarrassingly. Yeah. I'm as bad as that. It's easily done, isn't it? Easily done.
Very easily done.
I mean, microwave, you don't really hear microwave in Japanese. Do you know there's another word for microwave in Japanese?
Oh,
do you know what
there?
It is?
Right, okay. No, I don't. I think you may have mentioned it on a video. Little metal hot box.
No. It's quite weird. It's denji, yeah, literally or like denji range. Renji. Range. Ah. I think it's from the word range because it's gaidaigo, like a foreign borrowed word. So I think they took the word range and just went denji. there you go. Although I remember in one of my apartment tour videos when I first moved to Sendai, I had this just the worst apartment I've ever had. My bed was affected. It was all in one room. It was a studio, and my bed was like in the kitchen. Yeah. Like I slept with my head in a microwave. And but in the video, this is the one where Natsuki goes around and I point at something and he has to guess what it is in English. And
he
came up with like, he thought the vacuum cleaner was called the fucking cleaner. I don't know how he got to that. I think I went vacuum cleaner and he went fucking cleaner because he misheard me saying vacuum.
Enjoyable.
He thought the microwave. I was like, what's that? And he said, is that the electric box? Like, electric box? That sounds amazing. That sounds better than microwave.
Yeah, damn right.
And people loved it so much, we turned it into merchandise and sold it as a T-shirt. But not many people bought it. I think that was the worst-selling T-shirt we've had on the Abroad Japan merchandise store. And I can't say that I'm surprised. Before we dive into your questions in the fax machine, guys, we're going to take a quick break. Back in a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster, Annette Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan. Stakhanov's brand new show, My Seven Wonders, with Clive Anderson, is available to listen to now. Clive will be quizzing some of the world's most interesting celebrities, including Griff Rhys-Jones and Shappi Kosandi, about their own personal Seven Wonders of the World. Join Clive and his first guest, Dara O'Brien. Dara talks to Clive about his love for the Irish sport hurling and some of the extra benefits that come with owning a hurley stick.
It's just pleasant to have a big stick in the house every so often. For home security, it's always nice to know that I have an arsenal if I need it.
I'll bear that in mind if I'm tempted to burgle your house in the middle of the night.
Just do it. Honestly, that's how I stand. I stand naked with my Irish testicles dangling, challenging people.
They discuss finding humour in quantum physics.
It's like saying, is the cat dead or not? Would somebody just open the box? Would somebody just open the box?
And discovering new passions during lockdown.
Lockdown ran a schism, essentially, between the young comics who immediately went, I must learn new skills. I must learn video editing and TikTok. And I must find new ways to bring my comedy to people. And the older comics went, yeah, retirement, it'd be all right, actually. That's the guy. Turns out, you know, it's okay.
It's not too bad.
Search My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson on your favourite podcast player to hear the first episode now.
And we're back, and it's time to dive into the fax machine. What have we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
We've got a message from someone called Ben from Grimsby, UK. It's a nice place, not a good football team, though. Hi, Chris Beats. I love the podcast. Been listening since the first episode. Oh, stop. It helps me get through my very early shifts at work in the cold. I was wondering if the people of Japan might be curious about the UK. Do you ever have the same kind of questions once people learn that you're British? It would be interesting to know what aspects of the UK or Europe are the most appealing to them, considering so many people from the West are interested in Japan. I hope to visit the country someday, and it would be very interesting to speak to any Japanese person who is curious about the UK. Cheers for all your hard work on the podcast and the Abroad in Japan YouTube channel, Ben from Grimsby in the UK. I mean, from my perspective, a lot of Brexit talk last time I was in Japan.
Oh,
for
yeah.
For obvious reasons.
Well, they didn't understand why we were doing it, I think. There's a lot of people that are interested in British culture, particularly during the Harry Potter years. It was all Harry Potter, but I think the most popular country for Japanese tourists in Europe, I think it's France. I think it's France, and there was obviously the well known Paris syndrome, right, where people would go to Paris and be freaked out and by how it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. And Italy is second, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
They love Italy because of the food. And then the UK was third. Could be wrong there. I need to look that up again. But yeah, I mean, you meet a lot of people that have interest in British culture, like Natsuki, right? When he found out I was from the UK, our friendship kind of kicked off there and then. Like, he was like, where are you from? I was like, the UK. He exploded. If I'd gone, I'm from Spain, he would have gone, oh, Spain, that's nice. Wow, yeah. But I don't know if it would have had that rapport, because he's not into Spanish punk rock music. It's British punk rock. So it's all about specific people. I remember I was in Onomichi one time, and I was about, it was the night before I did the Shimnami Kaido cycle for the first time out of the two times I've done it. And I was sitting with my friend in the port having a beer with my friend Sam, who joined me on the cycle. And this Japanese guy walked over and he's like, "Where are you from?" And I was like, "Oh, the UK." And for the next 25 minutes, he just went, "Oh, Beatles." I went, "Yep." He went, "Oh, fish and chips." I went, "Yep." "Oh, Harry Potter." "Right, yeah." "Oh.
Got any more?"
And he literally listed off every facet, every element of British culture that he knew or he'd heard. He's like, "Princess Diana." I was like, "Yep." literally that for 25 minutes. And it took him time to think up the next one. And so he'd be like, "Princess Diana." And I'd go, "Yep." And then I'd sort of look down at my beer, take a swig, and he'd be like,
"He'd do another one." Brilliant.
"Oxford University." And I'd be like, "Yep, we've got that. Yep." And it's just that. We should bring him on the podcast. That's quality content right there. Just get him to list off every facet of British culture. But you meet people like that. And you've met a few, haven't you? In like your bars in Fukuoka and...
Yeah, we sort of like list, they sort of go, "Brighton." They always have the weirdest thing to kind of like, because football's kind of my bag, so I can always talk football, but like, yeah, they'll list off stuff and you're like, "You got any more?" And you sort of want to go, "Look, have a think about, would this be interesting if we were both speaking the same language?" It's just a memory game for you, mate, isn't it? But they're always very sweet. But you're like, yeah, David Beckham.
Oh, David Beckham. He's huge.
Big one. Well, you know, so it's just a lot of chat about Liverpool, really, because Minamino played for them. He's now on loan at Southampton, I believe.
Yeah, and when I got here, Manchester United was big because they had a Japanese football player as well, right?
Yeah.
I think most Japanese folks have a mutual respect for the UK that we have for Japan, and I think they like the UK. Hmm. I think it's the same for, if you're from America as well, you'll find the same sort of thing. They like the British people. So come on over, have a wild time, drink your beers and get ready to meet people who are going to list off all your favourite things about the UK. We've got one here from Siobhan who says, "Hello, Chris and Pete. I've been a long time Abroad in Japan subscriber on YouTube, but I've only recently found the podcast on Spotify and started binging them. My question pertains to the horrible Japanese winters that Chris seems to complain about a lot. Are they really that bad? I've spent my entire life living in Canada, where it's practically winter for 10 months of the year, and I've frozen my ass so many times that the cold doesn't bother me anymore. I'd love to visit Hokkaido and the northern part of Honshu in the winter, but the way Chris talks about Japan in the winter makes it sound like these places are consistent minus 40 degrees Celsius every day with nasty wind chill. Is that really the case? Another question that's related is, how cold or warm is the southern part of the country if northern Japan is a frozen hellscape? Would visiting Okinawa and Kyushu be a good or bad time, or good or bad idea in the winter? Lots of love from Canada, Siobhan." Bloody Canadians. All my friends are Canadians, right? And my family are from Canada as well. Whenever I'm like, "Oh, it's minus 5 here," they're like, "Wow, minus 5? It's minus 10 here." They're always trying to one-up rascals. But it feels colder than it is in Japan because the air is really humid, right? So like minus 5 feels like minus 15. And you can see on the weather... Right. Like the apps on that app, if you look at an app, the weather, right, it'll be like minus 5, but feels like minus 15. So take that, Canada, or we beat you. But it's the wind as well. The Siberian winds are brutal. And in where I used to live, in Sakata, in Yamagata Prefecture, the local train got blown over, like, off the entire track once because the wind was so bad. And they have to frequently cancel flights that go from there to Tokyo because the winds. Is really bad. So I'd say that's the issue. The wind is pretty brutal. You have to go through a mountain range to get to certain places, like there. So if I go from Sendai to where Natsuki is, I don't do it in winter because if I come back alive, it's a miracle. Because I have to go over a mountain range and there's like 4 meters of snow that's piled up. And it's really quite scary and dangerous and unnerving. One time, my windscreen wipers got frozen to the window of the car and I had to keep getting out and like ripping them off the window, smash the ice off, and then carry on driving for another 10 minutes. And then it would happen again. They would get frozen to the windscreen. So it is brutal.
Wild.
I don't know if it's Canada brutal, but it's brutal. And I have to admit, doing it 5 months of the year, as I did do, it gets quite depressing. 5 months of that, not being able to go outside easily, takes its toll. Definitely does. But I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't let that put you off going to Hokkaido in winter. Like, I've just got back from Hokkaido, as I talked about on Wednesday's episode. Didn't go according to plan entirely. But it was a lot of fun. And
just make sure you got enough petrol in your tank.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you've been here for winter last year. How do you find it, Pete?
Yeah, it was very, very discombobulated coming up to Sapporo for, in my thermals, walking around at the snow festival and then fly. Did I fly? Sounds like, I think I may
you
have
did,
flown.
You did, yeah. You nearly missed it.
Flew down to, Fukuoka, and places like that. And it was just like, just wild how different how warmer it is. You know, you're walking around in a jumper and it's quite warm. You know, it's too warm for a jumper in certain places. And even in Tokyo, to be honest, that can be quite warm.
Yeah, yeah. Tokyo is a very, because it's really strange. Like, Tokyo kind of juts out. If you look at a map of Japan, Tokyo is almost at the most southern point of the mainland, because Japan sort of, it curves around, right? Like a reverse L shape. So Tokyo is actually a relatively southern point, and it has the sort of Pacific winds and whatnot that keeps it warm. So Tokyo very rarely gets snow. It's crazy. Like, when I get on the bullet train to go from Tokyo to Sendai or Tohoku, in the space of an hour, it's like changing countries. You go from, you know, 15 degrees Celsius, nice blue skies, to bloody Arctic winds and just shit and snow. And it's crazy. Like, whenever friends come up to visit, which they don't do enough. I don't know why friends don't come to visit. It's always sad. come on up. Join the fun. Like, when they do come up, they're like, oh my God, it's like I've traveled to a different country. And Tokyo, it's a nice place. If you like sunny weather all year round, get yourself to Tokyo. And likewise, Kyushu and Okinawa are pretty warm as well, but they don't get snow apart from some of the mountains in Kyushu. So,
Interesting.
Stick there. Yeah. Yeah. Anything you'd like to add, Pete? Anything you'd like to add?
No, I mean, like, to be honest, Fukuoka is always very much warmer, and obviously Okinawa. I've heard that Okinawa gets very, very warm, very, very quickly at the start of the year, sort of January, February time. You're always surprised whether it's, you know, how that one pans out.
Now I've been to the most northern extreme point of Japan in Cape Sawyer.
Mm.
I would love to go to the most southern point, but I don't know where it is. It must be like Ishigaki in South Okinawa. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know your Okinawa?
No. I just know that it's like, it's just weird islands are just kind of like, because I've never been there, like, I just have no concept about what's the nicest one, what's the ones you can't visit, what's the ones you have to get internal boats and stuff.
It's a different world down there. It's a place where they eat corned beef and spam. It's right up my street. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back to do it all over again on Wednesday, guys. But for now, as always, many thanks for listening. And if you're a long-time listener, thank you for tuning in every week and being a part of the show. We love doing it. And it's fun. It's my highlight of the week, sitting down with you, Pete. So thank you. And thank you to you, Pete, for sticking around this long and not running away. It's been a blast.
Indeed.
But for now, guys, we'll see you to do it all over again on Wednesday. But no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you then. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.